you know, it's difficult. You know, our assumption is that you probably need a substantial lead by the Leave vote in an opinion poll to actually get a Leave decision at election day. That's a guess on our part, but it seems to be a reasonable one. I mean, the odds makers seem very confident. You can't forget that the odds makers were completely wrong about the last English election. We're caught completely wrong. On our terminal, we have a few functions. Microsoft's Bing search engine claims to have an ability to look at searches that people have made and decide whether they're leaning to stay or leave, and claim that their methodology gave you a good call for the Scottish referendum. But the bottom line for us is that we're not sure which way the poll will go, but we're fairly sure that the stated outcome of a Leave vote is not as big as the scaremongers have said. It's very difficult to see a direct path from a Leave vote to an economic crisis or a clear recession. So although we're not sure which way the vote goes, we're fairly sure that the worst-case scenario of a Leave vote has been overstated.
Michael, it's a rish in Hong Kong. Now, the thing is here, have you ever come across a campaign like this, the hustings like this, where... Well, you got a situation where never has there been so much heat generated in such little light.
It is unusual. I mean, I am a UK citizen. It's a long time since I lived there. I can't vote there anymore. You know, I do remember the 75 election. I'm old enough to have been alive for that one. That was a much, much more polite affair. That was 41 years ago. Ironically, at the time, the left were the ones that wanted to leave, and the right were the ones who were desperate to, desperate to stay. That was a Labour government who brought that referendum. But I don't remember anything like the kind of degree of upset and you know, the tragic events of last week would have been unimaginable in 1975.
Mm-hmm. Let's just move the subject slightly away from this referendum in the UK, but we can actually talk about it. But there's so much going on. There's so much noise out there right now. And Janet Yellen, well, I mean, she was fairly unconvincing, wasn't she, with really her belief that the American economy had turned the corner?
Yes, she seems to be, you know, really starting to embrace this idea of a secular stagnation. I think it's very clear that the bar has been raised for economic data to actually provoke a Fed response. And she's basically come out and said, look, we're happy to be proved wrong by the economy getting stronger and inflationary pressures building later on this cycle, and we can play catch up at that point in time. I think that this shift is real. I think we'll hear more about it over the summer. You know, I would expect her at Jackson Hole to talk at more length about something like this. And you know, I think in response, I actually think the odds of inflationary pressures building have gone up over the last few weeks.
Really?
Yeah, no, I do. We do see, you know, when we try and strip the volatility from commodity prices out of U.S. inflation, particularly the CPI data, you know, service inflation is above 2.5% and is moving. Anything housing, shelter related, is moving. You know, medical expenses seem to be moving. And if you get any kind of a snapback from the commodity complex, and we think that's already underway. I don't think it's crazy to, you know, expect CPI somewhere between 2.5% to 3% at the headline level this time next year. And I think she'd say that'd be great. I think that's what we should start to expect.
So do they risk raising rates to try to take care of what you're talking about and perhaps create greater instability in the foreign exchange?
I think she's saying that's a risk she would be willing to take in 2017 in order to avoid the risk of tightening into a weakening economy in 2016. That's certainly what she's saying today. What I've come to believe is that actually what we should probably expect to see if inflationary pressures come back is a prolonged period of negative real interest rates, both at the policy level, at the short end of the curve, you know, and at the long end of the curve, because I think everyone's going to be so resistant to the idea that this is a possibility. And even when they see it, they're not going to really believe it's happening. So, as I say, if that does happen, it's quite favorable for reflationary assets. It becomes quite favorable for commodities and emerging markets. And later on, eventually, there will have to be a fairly dramatic policy response. But as I say, that's a 2017 story, perhaps.
Michael, the thing is, no matter where you look in the world really right now, of course, there's some spots which have probably avoided it, but we've never really come out of this global financial crisis cleanly, have we?
No, we did in emerging markets in 2010-11, but that really completed their cycle. And you know, we had something of a V-shape in the US and a little sort of V-shape in Europe after the euro crisis. But no, we've never fully regained our footing. But that's because economic data sort of takes everything and puts it into one big bucket. You've had a lot of mini sector booms and some individual country booms. And I think in general, the overall recovery has been better than most people would describe in their day-to-day dialogue.